in Wisconsin. Alex Lazary yesterday announced that he was dropping out of the race, endorsing Mandela Barnes. Remember, a week or so ago, Tom Nelson dropped out of the race and said he was endorsing Mandela Barnes, the other Mandela. This leaves two major candidates in the polls still alive, which is Mandela Barnes and Godlewski. And then there's also Steve Olakara, there's Peter Pekarsky, and there are a couple of other candidates. The election is the 9th of August. The election is a week from this coming Tuesday. It's time to get going. I want to talk about this dropping out of Lazary, what it signifies, and what I think it means for the Senate race. When he dropped out, Alex Lazary, in the last Marquette poll, had been maybe two points behind Mandela Barnes. Mandela Barnes released an internal poll that showed now he was 14 points ahead of Lazary. Internal polls, look, they're all over the place, but the truth of the matter is that I'm sure Lazary was doing his own internal polling, and it may have looked like the momentum was shifting to Mandela Barnes. You know, politics is a funny thing. Everything is static for a long time. Everybody goes, oh, I'm undecided and whatever. There are two choke points in a campaign. The last 96 hours. The last 96 hours, the last 4 days is when everything starts to shift, and there's no force in the world that can push that back just through advertising in the last 4 days. But in the last 2 weeks, things start to shift, and it's sort of like an avalanche as weather gets warm. You know, the ice and the snow start to come down. You can't stop it. And for whatever reason, Barnes had gotten an awful lot of endorsements. You know, he'd gotten Bernie Sanders, he'd gotten Elizabeth Warren, he'd gotten this one and that one, all on the progressive side. And a primary tends to appeal to the extreme of the party. So in the Democratic primary, it's the more progressive side, and the Republican primary, it's more the Trump side. And that's just the fact of the matter. So I think Lazary probably looked at this. He'd already put in $12 million, $12.3 million. He ran a heck of a race. And let me tell you something. Alex, you have a bright future in Wisconsin politics. You're a good guy. Your heart's in the right place. You've done a great job with the Milwaukee Bucks as a vice president. And you did a great job getting the 2020 Democratic National Convention to Milwaukee. The fact that COVID interfered with that is not our fault, not your fault. And you're a young guy. You're a friend of Mandela Barnes, you've endorsed him. If he ends up being the nominee, which it looks like he may well be, and then he goes on to beat Ron Johnson, you will have accomplished a significant service. I've previously said to Tom Nelson, you are a very good guy. You're young and you have a bright future in the Democratic Party, and you've done a great job as county executive of Outagamie County. And we simply can't lose you in politics either. And as Sarah Godlewski, look, you're still alive. There's a notion in the World Series of Poker. I, by the way, like playing poker as an amateur, not for a lot of money and not in a bad way, but I like playing poker. Played with buddies all through law school, my legal practice, I do now. And there's an old saying that as long as you have a chip in a chair, you're alive. Chip in a chair. There's a famous case where one guy almost had all his money wiped out. He had one chip left, but he still had a chair at the table, and he went on to win. He just went all in and kept doubling, and he won. So Sarah Godlewski has a chip in a chair, and if for any reason this doesn't work out for her, she did a heck of a job as state treasurer. She did a heck of a job mustering support against the Republican constitutional amendment to strip state treasurer away from the voting public and make it an appointed secret position where the Republicans could have gotten their hands on the money. And Sarah, you have a heck of a bright future too. And you have a chip in a chair. And in Mandela, I just want to say you're a good man. You're a friend of mine. I've known you a long time. You have a terrific future. And right now, you're in the catbird seat. You're in the catbird seat. Wish you well. And I will say this to whoever. And I want to say this to everybody. Whoever is the nominee, whoever is the nominee of the Democratic Party, get behind them. I don't care who you voted for, who you wanted in the primary. Ron Johnson is an outlier. Ron Johnson isn't even a normal Republican or a conservative. What Ron Johnson is, he's an enabler of the insurrection. He said that, it was just a bunch of guys letting off little steam. But if it had been Black Lives Matter, he would have been concerned. He had to throw the black reference in. Black Lives Matter did nothing like the insurrection. The vast majority of the protests that were the Black Lives, and remember something, they were for George Floyd, who was strangled over 8 or 9 minutes in Minnesota by a sadist. They were for Jacob Blake in Kenosha, who was shot in the back about 8 times as he was getting into a car with his kids in the back seat by an officer. And he was the prosecutor, both the attorney general and the county prosecutor declined to bring charges. The truth is that there is in Wisconsin, and it's the fault of the electorate, frankly, there is no killing of any law enforcement that will result in any criminal sanction. Part of that is for good reason. Law enforcement has the most dangerous job in the world. Law enforcement themselves get killed. They have an absolute courage. My uncle and my cousin were cops. One was a lieutenant of police in New York City, and the other one was a police officer in New London, Connecticut. And it's very dangerous. And I have friends, Vince Bobbitt, good friend of mine, ran for mayor, ran for city attorney, excellent, excellent guy, former municipal judge, was a police officer, and was shot when he was on duty. Good friend of mine. So in almost every circumstance, the police have to be able to not only defend themselves, but to stop any possibility of their being shot at or killed. That said, you have a guy up in Minneapolis who has a man restrained and strangles him. That's a different story. That's a different story. A guy gets in the car and he simply turns his back on you and his kids are in the back seat and there's no gun in sight and you pump 8 bullets into his back. That's wrong. That's very different. So in any event, Mandela Barnes is looking good with about 2 weeks to go, less than 2 weeks to go. Sarah Godlewski has a chip in a chair, and she's a formal contender. And I don't know how this shakes out. Let me tell you something. We cannot predict where Alex Lesry's votes go. Alex Lesry is a good man, and he endorsed Mandela Barnes. But voters have their own minds. I don't know where they'll go. I don't know where they'll go. The same with Tom Nelson's supporters. I don't know where independents go. I don't know where the undecideds go. So stand by and stay tuned. Now, the reason this is such an important election is a couple of reasons. One, obviously, is it's the best chance for the Democrats to flip a seat to hold our Senate majority. Right now, Raphael Warnock in Georgia is looking very good against Herschel Walker. Herschel Walker has done and said some nutty things. It looks like we can hold Georgia. John Fetterman in Pennsylvania looks good against Mehmet Oz. Mehmet Oz, who didn't serve in the American military, but served in the Turkish military, didn't vote in U.S. elections, but he votes in Turkish elections. Yeah, he lives in New Jersey. He's a TV personality. He's known as Dr. Oz. And he has nothing to do with Pennsylvania, except that his wife's parents, his in-laws, live in Pennsylvania. So he, quote, rented a room, end quote, in their house. Oh, really? He rented a room in his in-laws' house, so he has what he calls, quote, residency, end quote. He has more residency in Newark, New Jersey, and Istanbul, Turkey, than he does in Pennsylvania. So Fetterman is looking very, very good. Good guy. Cortez Maestro out in Nevada, believe it or not, is looking like she may do it. And Maggie Hassan, New Hampshire, the same way. And these are the ones we have to hold on to. In terms of other flips, there are other possibilities. It's hard to flip a seat, but we have a real good shot at flipping the seat here in Wisconsin. And it's not just because Ron Johnson has said nutty things, for instance, about COVID. He was at a conference here in Wisconsin where a nut was on the panel who said that taking the vaccine could give you AIDS. That's false. that comes out of left field, comes out of nowhere. But Johnson is saying, you idiot, you're out of your mind, and throwing down his microphone and walking off. No, he didn't go that. He said, quote, what you say may be true. What you say may be true. That's what he said. That guy shouldn't be in the Senate if he says that, which he did say. It's on tape. He said that he's not vaccinated. He discourages people from taking vaccines. And he was pushing ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. Ivermectin, remember, is a veterinary drug for large animals, cows, horses. Don't go shooting up that ivermectin unless you weigh 2,000 pounds. He is a Trump slave. You know, this guy, if you put him, when I say you, I mean we, put him back in the Senate for six more years after he not only, let me tell you something else. What were you doing 4th of July, 2018? Well, 4th of July, 2018, Ron Johnson was in Moscow, Russia with Putin. Moscow, Russia. That was symbolic. He genuflected to Moscow, not to the United States. He was the chairman when they had the majority of the Subcommittee on Homeland Security of the Senate. The FBI and the CIA reported to him in security matters. He was asked, do you trust the FBI and the CIA? He said, no. He has a lot in common with the far left. Neither one of them trusts the CIA or the FBI. It's about time that some true Americans got back into government. In any event, this guy, if he gets back in, is another Trump vote, another election denier vote. He has also said that he thinks that the state legislature should run and control elections, and they want to appoint presidential electors regardless of who wins the primary. That's fine with him. That's fine with him. Okay, good luck, Mandela. Good luck, Sarah. Good luck, everybody else. Going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, there's a lawsuit that's been filed and is overdue, and it's irrefutable in my view. Four voters with disabilities in Wisconsin have sued in federal court to suspend or overturn the Wisconsin directive from the Republicans that even when it comes, forget drop boxes, even when it comes to mailing, even when it comes to walking in and handing it to the clerk, your ballot, that has to be you, can't be a relative, can't be anybody else. That's considered ballot harvesting. These four voters, and they were picked, they're excellent plaintiffs, they can't move their arms or legs. They can't move their arms or legs. If they get an absentee ballot and fill it out, they can't move their arms or legs. They are telling a trusted relative or a caregiver what they want. They can read, but they can't get to the post office. They can't get down to the clerk's office to drop it in the slot. And this is Wisconsin. In Arizona, on the Navajo reservations, they don't even have mail service in some areas. The post office is 40 miles away in some areas on the Navajo reservation. And what happens is somebody, a neighbor or a good friend, comes around your little neighborhood once a week and says, anybody have any mail? Drop off. We're going to go in and pick up the mail, and then they distribute what comes, bills, that kind of thing. Say you're an 80-year-old Navajo woman. You've never driven in your life. You can't afford a car, and in your culture, you aren't encouraged to learn how to drive. Say you have that. Your ballot comes, it's in the mail. There's no law that says you can't have somebody pick up your mail from a communal P.O. box. They drop it off, you fill off your ballot. Are you going to walk in 100 degree heat, 40 miles to mail it? No. So the friend, the neighbor comes around, the neighborhood block captain. Any mail, Doris? Yes, I do. I have a birthday card for my niece. I have a bill to the electric company, and here's my ballot. He goes down, and that's illegal. The Republicans are doing this precisely to stop people whom they think might vote Democratic overall. Well, in Wisconsin, yes, we have a lot of Republican judges, but most Republican judges have a lot of integrity, just like every other judge. And if I'm sitting as a judge, and this is federal court, so the Wisconsin Supreme Court can't get their mitts on it, it has nothing to do with drop boxes. It has nothing to do with drop boxes. The question is, can somebody who's paralyzed, can't move their arms or legs, are they permitted to vote? They have full cognition and they can read. Their caregiver jots down, you know, fills it out, who they want for governor and this, that, and the other thing. What about signature? Do they put a pencil in their teeth and make an X? Yeah, some of them do. Or do they say that the caregiver says, I'm signing this, and I've been the caregiver for blank years, blah, blah, blah. But more importantly, how does that ballot get registered? Now, there are no drop boxes anymore by Supreme Court diktat. Well, that's not what's at issue here. What's at issue here is, how does it even get into a post office box? Or how does it get into a clerk's office? Say a clerk's office is open from 8 till 5, and they have a slot for ballots. That's not a drop box within the meaning of the prohibition, because it is being observed and under the control of the clerk's office. So you walk in. Now you can say, come on, Matt, use your head. Somebody walks in and just quick pops it in the mail, or quick pops it in the clerk's slot there. How are they going to know it's not the voter himself? Well, the thing is, if it's against the law, you don't want to do it. And at some point, they're going to do a spot random check, pull out that ballot, ask to see the ID of the person that stuck it in, and charge them. Maybe charge them criminally. This is being done by Republicans to sow doubt, difficulty, and confusion, and make people afraid of prosecution. That's all it is. So I don't know what federal judge it's been assigned to, but I know the federal judges in Wisconsin, and Republicans and Democrats, they're upstanding people. I don't know a single federal judge in Wisconsin that I have any doubts about. They're going to look at it, and they're going to do what I would do. And frankly, what you would do, it has nothing to do with being a lawyer. They'll look at the clown who is representing the Republicans and say, okay, is somebody who can't move his arms and legs a human being? Well, yes. If he says no, he's in deep trouble. Okay, and as a citizen, so should he be permitted to vote? Yes, he should. Okay, he can't move his arms and legs. That may have been, by the way, because of a war injury in Iraq or Afghanistan, but maybe not. Maybe it was a car accident. Maybe it's congenital of some sort. For there are people with terrible disease, Lou Gehrig's disease and that kind of thing, terrible, terrible. So how are they going to vote? Well, you know, I guess they're not going to be able to vote. Well, no, you cannot say that. That is not a legitimate constitutional argument. So if I were a judge, I'd say, well, I am going to issue an order that's the least intrusive in terms of invading Wisconsin's election law, the least intrusive, and that is that people can have someone else, as long as they're the ones that decide what's going on that ballot, can have someone else physically, ministerially stick it in a post office box or a clerk's office slot. And they'll say, well, okay, but just make sure, Judge, these are Republicans now, make sure that they have to have an affidavit from a doctor that they can't move their arms and legs. Well, no. Who's going to pay for that? Who's going to pay for that? Number one. Number two, there are doctors that have scripts on their desk for marijuana in California. They don't even examine the guy. They just say, here it is. This is when it's just medical marijuana. And this is a scam. This is a fraud, making him go through that. And then what happens if he can move his arms and legs, but he gets real tired and he has no car and he doesn't want to go downtown? And the doctor says, no, I won't sign it. Good federal judge is going to go, you know, no, this is getting a little ridiculous. You've already banned drop boxes and so on. For God's sake, don't interfere with the U.S. Post Office. You don't control the U.S. Post Office, number one. Number two, don't control the municipal clerk's office. If someone comes in and there is no evidence of fraud in this state at all, there really isn't. Think about something. The more you are pumped up by the Republican Party to say, oh, there might have been fraud, there might have been fraud, you just undermine our democracy. When was the last time you voted? You know the folks who run those polls. They're frequently elderly. Elderly ladies, elderly gentlemen, frequently like that. And these people are very good people, and they're very honest. Going to break. The lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open. 844-967-2789. A major development in Washington, and this is truly major. Joe Manchin caved. He has now agreed with Schumer, but you know that this was orchestrated by Biden in the background. Did a terrific job. They have now reached a deal on soft infrastructure. Believe it or not, Manchin has reversed virtually all of his objections. Not all of them, but virtually all. On energy, drug prices, and taxes, corporate taxes. It's unbelievable. But here's what I'm reporting. This came out late yesterday. Manchin now agrees, to allow Medicare to negotiate prescription drug prices. That is huge. That is huge. If you go to a store to buy prescription drugs, and let's say that you don't even have insurance, you're going to pay a very high dollar. Your insurance company has probably negotiated a group rate. Companies, for instance, a large company, say IBM, Microsoft, will negotiate large rates, large reduction of rates. But Medicare is the largest consumer of prescription drugs in the world. They can easily go to the pharmaceutical companies and say, look, you're charging us $20 for this pill. It's costing you $2 to make it. And the pharmaceutical company go, yeah, but we have marketing. We have people to pay. Yeah, yeah, I understand that. But instead of $20, we'll give you $5. It costs you $2 to make it, and that's $3 for marketing, overhead. No, no, we want more. And then they agree on $6 so that there's a good profit margin for them. That will save hundreds of billions of dollars. It was stopped by the Republicans, because the pharmaceutical companies are among the donors who own them. And Manchin finally has said yes. I think largely because Biden skillfully got senior groups in his state. West Virginia is a poor state. It's not one of these states with the high average income compared to, say, Massachusetts or New York or California. And they suddenly woke up and thinking, well, why aren't we paying less for prescription drugs? So Manchin's agreed to that. The second thing is, believe it or not, he has a $30 million stake in a coal company. He has agreed to a large clean energy expenditure from the government that will reduce carbon emissions by 40% by 2030. That's what we wanted in the first place. And he kept saying no because of the energy industry. I think what's happened is that Democrats in his state got so disgusted with him, and there was so much discussion around the country about putting a primary candidate up against him. He remembered a basic rule of politics. Before you start pandering to the other side to get a few scraps of votes, hold your base. Hold your base. If your base turns on you in a Republican state and you're a Democrat, you're not going anywhere. He will now say okay to that. The third thing is, and this is something, and by the way, this is great, the title of this bill is the Deficit Reduction Act, which is true. It will cut the deficit by $300 billion in two ways. $300 billion in two ways. Ramping up IRS enforcement and closing for real certain loopholes. Why is that significant? Why isn't that the usual baloney where guys go, oh, we're going to close loopholes and blah, blah, blah? Because George W. Bush, about 15 years ago when he was president, at the behest of his donors, largely securities thieves, they came up with an idea. They said, okay, one way to avoid enforcement is just cut the number of IRS auditors, accountants, and enforcers. And they cut enforcement staff massively. Now, the IRS stations 12 months a year auditors in the large investment banks in New York because they don't trust them. And I don't trust them either. And they monitor all these transactions. But they don't have people embedded in large corporations, and they don't have people embedded with large investors. But in the old days, there would be random spot checks, and you were afraid of going to jail if you committed a criminal offense, and that's what kept you honest. The reason that you and I file our taxes honestly is frankly morality. I believe in it. But even if you are an immoral person, you go, well, I just read about a guy who went to jail for 3 years. I can't do that. They cut it so badly that the IRS was auditing, you know, one in maybe hundreds of thousands of returns. You could practically put down anything, anything, and get away with it because of George W. Bush and the Republicans. So anytime anybody goes praising George W. Bush because compared to Trump, he looks good, Trump is the worst, but George W. Bush is terrible, okay? This will add massive amounts of auditors, accountants, and IRS enforcers to flush out a trillion dollars or more that we're losing in tax revenue. And it'll close the deficit by $300 billion. And loopholes, let me give you an example of a loophole. I don't know that this one was in it, but the one that kills me is, you're not going to believe this, if you run a hedge fund, okay, you don't pay income tax at all. Your secretary will pay a higher rate than you do. What do I mean by that? These people get something like 2% of the assets every year just for nothing. So 2% of a billion is 20 million. 2% of 100 billion is 2 billion. If you have 100 billion under management, you get 2 billion because you have a couple of computers and secretaries. Then you'll get another 1.5% or 2% for any amount that you exceed the S&P 500 index in your investments. You take a lot of chances. You short things, you buy derivatives. If it pays off, if you have 100 billion under investment, you get the 2 billion right off the top, no matter how badly you do, and then you get 1.5% of anything over the S&P 500. If the investment doesn't pay off, even if half the fund is wiped out, you stick out your hand and say, too bad, give me my 2 billion. And you pay no income tax. Why is that? Because their lobbyists went to Congress and they said, we have an idea. Call their, what they make, something other than income. Call it carried interest. Carried interest is a form of compensation you get, and this is typically in oil wells and timber. It's supposed to take into account the enormous risk you take when you occasionally get a good well. It's called carried interest, and you only pay the capital gains rate, which is less than half of the income tax rate. Say, let's call it 15% for now, okay? The reason for that is you may go out and legitimately drill 50 wells that cost you millions of dollars. 49 of them are dry, but one of them's a gusher. So the money you get out of that gusher, the argument went, well, why don't we give them a break for the risk they took and the amount they put in? Timber is somewhat similar. It's very, very hazardous investment. And that is to compensate for risk. But there's no risk with the hedge fund. They get 2% off the top even if they bankrupt the fund. They have no risk. But they've given so much money to politicians, even New York senators are opposed to closing that loophole. Schumer and the other one, simply because they get their money from Wall Street. And that is true of almost every Republican and some other Democrats. I do not know if that loophole was closed in this bill. I hadn't heard that it was. But there are other loopholes that are very similar, and the Republicans have resisted closing them. And the idea is that we will cut the deficit by $300 billion a year by ramping up IRS enforcement and closing these loopholes. This bill will also expand the expanded Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, till 2025. What do I mean by that? What I mean by that is right now there's a subsidy on insurance premiums. In other words, the government pays part of them for poor people. That will extend till 2025, 3 more years. The idea is that at 2025, if even a Republican administration, God forbid, is in power, if they cut off tens of millions of people who are used to having health care, at some point, they're not even going to be able to do that. The SOP that they gave was to reform environmental permitting. Now, you may say, well, that's a terrible thing. Well, no, that's not a terrible thing. There are a lot of delays, and there are a lot of obstacles, and there are a lot of hurdles that you have if you want to build a plant or do something with permitting. If it's a bad plant, yeah, it shouldn't be permitted, but you shouldn't make people jump through unnecessary hoops. As a result of that, that is going to pass with just a majority. It's a major, major development. We're going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Flynn Director. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. I want to talk a little more about the Deficit Reduction Act that Manchin and Schumer just agreed to, orchestrated by Joe Biden, a tremendous success. Tough infrastructure is going to be passed. Let me give you a few other statistics. Because of the expansion of IRS enforcement and agents and the elimination of these loopholes, I talked about one. The worst one, the carried interest one, I do not know if that's in it or not, but there are many others like it. This is going to raise, i.e. save, the taxpayer, because it's going to raise in taxes, about $739 billion over 10 years. It's more than $70 billion a year. It's going to raise about $124 billion through increased IRS enforcement. That's roughly $900 billion, almost a trillion, of taxes that people are fraudulently avoiding. And that is great, and that was of great interest, obviously, to Manchin. Two things that linger with me. What's happening to cinema here? Cinema is in bed with the pharmaceutical companies. They are not going to like the idea that somehow Medicare is going to negotiate prescription drug prices. I assume that Schumer and I assume that Manchin have talked to her. But there's one other thing she's really not going to like, because this also, believe it or not, imposes a 15% corporate minimum tax. That is something that the Democrats, and I think is a good idea, have been pushing for a long time. When you have lobbyists down there in Congress working to make sure their corporate clients pay no taxes. And the biggest companies in the country pay zero. They pay zero. Now, you don't want to impede their profitability. They hire a lot of people. We live in an enlightened capitalist economy. What do I mean by that? We have a safety net, Social Security and Medicare and unemployment comp and laws against child labor and worker comp. And that's what I mean by enlightened capitalism. We're not a socialist country, and I don't want us ever to be a socialist country. But at the same time, there's a lot of tax cheats around. And there are two kinds. One is flat-out fraud, and this IRS enforcement will get to that. But the other one isn't necessarily fraud in an intentional sense. It's making the best use of deductions and other things in the tax code that don't make any sense. I remember at one time we had a minimum corporate tax and also actually a minimum personal income tax. And so you could take charitable deductions, you could take this, you could take that. And if at the end of the day you only owed a little bit in taxes, whatever your income was, you still had to pay more because it was the minimum. And I think that's a fair way to put it. Remember that we were trying to get agreement worldwide to a 15% corporate minimum tax in all countries so that we were not disabled. Manchin opposed that. Well, now that he's approving the United States, I assume he'll approve it internationally. And what does that do? 100 countries had already signed on. This is a very, very favorable development. Sinema has said in the past she wouldn't accept that. I have a feeling somebody got to her and said, look, lady, knock it off. You're a Democrat. Yeah, but if you lose your Democratic base in Arizona, the way I think Manchin realized he loses Democratic base in West Virginia, there aren't enough middle ground Republicans to come over to you to even give you a ghost of a chance. I have a feeling that this is going to go through. Now, it's going to go through in a, as budget reconciliation. Remember, there's an exception to the filibuster. If it's financially related, it only needs 51 votes, and we have 50 Democrats, plus we have Kamala Harris. Moscow Mitch, that wicked little toad from Kentucky, got outfoxed here. What do I mean by that? He got outfoxed because they had said they would not vote for the Chip Production Act if this thing went through, and it looked like they blocked it because of Manchin. So they voted for the Chip Production Act, which would give hundreds of billions of dollars to enhance production of computer chips in this country to compete with the Chinese for research. The National Science Foundation would be funded. It was all good. Passed with a lot of Republican votes, including Moscow Mitch. The sly old poker player Schumer, 2 hours later, after it had been sent to Biden to be signed, unveiled that he had reached a deal with Manchin, and they were also going to do soft infrastructure. Moscow Mitch went nuts. Moscow Mitch is fighting for his life because Trump is against him. So he's fighting to look like a normal Republican, which is give business anything they want. And, oh, this is a fraud. I've been snookered. I've been hoodwinked and blah, 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 blah. But he was snookered and hoodwinked. And credit this to Biden, who is foxier than Moscow Mitch. Now, the Republicans, you're going to hear this. Republican talking points are coming out. Well, this is just to try to give Biden a win, blah, blah, blah. Well, baloney. Manchin said, you know, there's some things I won't go with. He would not go with the child care enhancer. And he would not go with, for instance, certain caregiver compensation. Okay. Well, family leave. All right. Well, we're going to have to look at that another day. But to get climate change, investment in clean energy, lower drug prices, cutting the deficit through greater enforcement and elimination of these loopholes, and extending the Affordable Care Act, the expanded payments, that is huge. That is huge. And the Republicans, I think, are going to be stupid about it. And I think that Ron Johnson, they're going to say, well, this is socialism. It's not capitalism. Hey, look, they said that about Social Security in 1935. They said it was socialism. They said it about Medicare in the 1960s and Medicaid. They said it originally. They said about worker compensation and minimum wage. And a Republican U.S. Supreme Court in the 30s said that was unconstitutional until there was such a surge of public sentiment for it that they chickened out. The Republicans will always say that something is socialist if their donors don't like it because it interferes with the amount of money they can get from the public trough. And that's just a plain statement of fact. So Congratulations, Joe Biden. Congratulations, Schumer. And congratulations, Joe Manchin. Maybe I was wrong about you, Joe. He did this elaborate striptease. I hope this is not another striptease where he has Manchin in his or Sinema in his pocket. Who's going to stick a knife in it? I don't think she has the guts to do it if Manchin went along with it. And Biden is laying the boom down on these people. They're not going to get reelected with their own base if they continue to screw around. So this is great. There's a great fight going on in the Republican Party in Wisconsin, which you may be overlooking. And that's between the Duchess of Foxconn, Rebecca Clayfish, and Tim Michaels, the businessman, never held an elected office, who was trying to muscle his way into the nomination by spending a lot of money. Trump came out for Michaels, and Trump is going to appear at the Wisconsin, at the Waukesha County Fairgrounds, August 5th, to endorse him. So Pence just came out yesterday and endorsed Clayfish, the Duchess, Pence and the Duchess. What it is Michaels is endorsed by the assassin. Pence, the subject of the assassination, is the one who endorsed the Duchess. Why do I say assassin? Because Trump said to them, to that crowd, knowing they were armed, they're not here to harm me, go up to the Capitol. And if Mike Pence does the right thing, great. And if he doesn't, oh, well, then in the afternoon he texts out, he didn't have the courage to do the right thing. And immediately the rabble started to shout, coward, coward, hang Mike Pence. There was a gallows there. That was an incitement to assassination of his own vice president. Can you imagine? I mean, think about this. Dwight Eisenhower calling for the assassination and hanging of Richard Nixon, his vice president. Or Ronald Reagan assassinating George H.W. Bush. Or Jimmy Carter assassinating Walter Mondale. This is incomprehensible in American history. But that's what you have. You have an assassin and the attempted assassin and the subject of the assassination endorsing different people. My guess is that the Duchess comes out on the short end of the stick. Pence right now is at about 2% in the Republican polls. People don't like him because Trump wanted him killed. I mean, that's kind of a blunt way to put it, but that's exactly the case. So if I'm the Duchess, she's scrambling to take the endorsement of a guy that low on the polls. Cruz endorsed her because anybody who wants to run against Trump in 2024 has to start endorsing different people to make it look like they're independent of Trump. It's a very lame way to be independent of Trump. If Pence got up in his hind legs and went, it was wrong of Trump to try to kill me. That's pretty basic. The guy said, kill Matt Flynn. I'd say, that's wrong. Very basic thing to say. Pence isn't capable of saying that. So in a very weird, passive-aggressive way, he endorses the Duchess. But the Duchess isn't going anywhere. And Michaels, I at first thought, you know, he's endorsed by Tommy Thompson. I thought this guy may be kind of a wolf in sheep's clothing and will really do the right thing like Thompson did. Thompson was a very good governor. But I'm beginning to think that he basically has no set of ideas or principles whatsoever except staying in power himself. It's a vanity thing. It's a vanity thing. We're going to a break. The lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
Off to my right, I see five mounted cowboys. Off to my left, right, a dozen or more. Shouting and shooting, I can't let them catch.